Maybe the theme here is a simple one. Journalists are human beings. They face trauma, conflict, and stereotyping. But unlike most professionals, the job often offers the peculiar opportunity to, in effect, cover themselves and their communities while being at least traditionally unknown to the audience, and also maybe not entirely known to themselves. Steve Fries is an editor for Our Detroit and a contributor for Newsweek. In 2015, he reflected in a piece about his coverage of cases related to gay marriage the previous year as a kind of self-examination. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
In the summer of 2014, you found yourself sitting next to a friend and an old colleague you hadn't seen in 14 years. She saw the gold band on your hand, and she said, "Oh, are you married now?" And you said, lowering your voice, "That actually kind of depends on what happens in this courtroom today." And you called it an uncomfortable collision of the personal and the professional.
So the case in Michigan became a big deal. It was an actual trial with witnesses, which we had not seen since the Prop 8 case in California. And then it went up to the appeals court and eventually Supreme Court. And it was one of the four cases that ultimately reversed all of the gay marriage bans across the country. So as this was happening, I was also a person, a human being, a gay person with a partner I wanted to legally marry. We have plans for a child, which we now have. But I didn't see any reason why I couldn't cover these cases.
Did anybody else suggest that you were too close to the material you would be covering?
No. One irony of it is that I had been trying so hard to stay out of the gay politics arena as a journalist that I didn't want to get married until it was just legal in my state. I was in Nevada, and then I was in Virginia, and then I was in Michigan. And every time I left a state, the state before me would make it legal. But I didn't have the right to do that in the state I was in. And to my mind, it seemed like a political act for me to go to another state to get married when that marriage license wouldn't have any force of law in my state. So I was actually trying really hard to take advantage of laws as they existed.
And not do explicit political acts. I get that. And
right.
Yet, 15 years before you were sitting in that courtroom with your long-lost colleague, you wrote a piece, this is back in 1999, for the Sun Sentinel's Sunday magazine about your own wedding with your first partner. And in it, you wrote about how the guests appeared oblivious to just how radical an event this was. You were writing a piece about yourself, personal journalism.
The fact that my first wedding was actually so ordinary felt to me like a bit of a revolution at the time. You're right, absolutely. There have been zigs and zags in the way that I approach these things. I just felt like when I became a point person covering the legal developments of the time, I needed to be extra conscious of what that meant.
So how did you then approach the reflection you wrote in 2015, the year after you were in the courtroom with your friend? Was it personal or was it strictly journalistic? Tell me the process.
I reported it out. I went back and I called up some of the people I had talked to. One of the people I spoke with was John Eastman. He is a very conservative lawyer, one of the architects of the anti-same-sex marriage legal framework. I talked to him over and over again. He was an important source for that point of view. And I never talked about myself. I was just another voice on the other end of the line. So I called him up and I said, "Look, I was just wondering, did you know I was gay?" He said, "No." I said, "Did you think that I covered the case fairly?" And I was very clear that I wanted the truth. I didn't want him to just say what he thought I wanted to hear. And he said, "You were fair. I felt like I was being quoted in context. I didn't have any problem with your journalism.
So what actually was the point of this return to the story of the year before and this return to the sources for that story?
I don't think that journalists do this enough. I don't think that journalists own the fact that they sometimes run into conflicts. They can work through if they're honest about it. In this case, I had this very crystal clear moment that made it obvious to me that there could be some reason to doubt the quality of my work. I just felt like it was a good example. I don't think that journalists need to disclose all of their personal biases in the stories while they're writing them, but I do think that it is useful to the public to know that we're real people. I really do believe that in the effort to sort through it in your own mind, you keep yourself on the right path as a journalist.
So when you're covering the news, how much of yourself do you disclose to build that credibility, to make yourself more trustworthy rather than less? What's the line you have to walk?
I don't think you disclose it at all in that context. I don't know where you would stop if you started. If I'm covering a trial, do I then have to explain that my brother-in-law is a DA or that somebody I know is a cop or that I've been robbed once? You know, I've been in this business a long time, and I remember the early 90s that was the first wave of efforts to diversify newsrooms, which, you know, 20, 30 years later really didn't go very well. But nonetheless, it was the first time we really started to talk about it seriously. Then came the conversation of, well, can they cover their own minority? Well, pick one. Do you want people with diverse opinions and diverse experiences that help the coverage because they know things and some people might feel more comfortable talking to them? Or do you want to play this ethics game that just increases people's suspicion and makes people question things that they don't need to question? If you're a journalist and you're covering a company that you own stock in, yes, you have to say that. You've chosen to buy that stock. I mean, you know, I didn't choose to be gay. The other person didn't choose to be a person of color or a woman. Nobody chose to be sexually assaulted or victim of any other type of crime. So those aren't the kinds of disclosures that are, in my mind, required every time you cover something.
Steve, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. This has been fun.
Steve Fries is an editor for Our Detroit and a contributor for Newsweek. Coming up, how to cover reality when there is always more than one. This is On the Media.
On the Media is supported by Progressive Insurance, committed to providing tools to enable customers to bundle home and auto insurance. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Now that's Progressive. And by Hint, water with a touch of true fruit flavor. Hint water is available in over 25 flavors, including watermelon, mango, and peach, with no sugar, sweeteners, or calories, in stores or delivered from drinkhint.com.